You are listening to a free podcast of The Majority Report with Sam Cedar. To support the show and receive nearly an hour extra material daily, become a member today at majority.fm. Resistance is futile.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar. It's time to look in the mirror, America. Do you like what you see?
I keep referring to Obama as the magic Negro.
Do you like what you see now?
Well, suck on this.
It's just a mirror, America.
Shared sacrifice by everybody.
What could it do to you except reflect your image?
I did nothing wrong at the Minneapolis airport.
The Majority Report.
Far more credible to me than PBS.
And Frontline.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
Ever get the feeling you've been cheated?
It is Tuesday, June 11, 2013. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live in the literal, though not metaphorical, shadow of the New York Times building in the fashionable Dollar Lunch District of New York City. Today on the program, more on Edward Snowden and the government secrets that he has exposed, the subsequent court filings issued by the ACLU to find out more about these massive surveillance programs, which our congressional leaders either did or did not know about because of lies that were maybe just cute by a half. Too cute by a half. It's presented to our elected leaders. Also, the state of immigration reform. We will know more this afternoon as to whether or not immigration will go forward. Immigration reform will go forward or will die in the Senate. The U.S. government is now dropping its attempts to prevent all access to the Plan B pill and college. Still a good investment, even if you drop out. All that and more on today's program. We're going to open up the phone lines early today at 646-257-3920. I may read IMs. I was off yesterday. It's a half day of school for my daughter. And I left you in the trusted hands of Matt and Mike.
And as far as Sam Cedar knows, there might not have even been a show yesterday.
That's right. I didn't have the opportunity to listen. But based on all the angry emails that Michael's getting, I can only imagine. I got to be honest with you. I have been following, obviously, this story. We have requests out to a lot of different people, obviously, to Glenn and Spencer Ackerman. Ackerman worked on this. They are not available to us at this point. I mean, partly, I think, just because there's a lot bigger outlets, truth be told, that they are in demand or who are seeking them. And, you know, clearly, particularly from Glenn's perspective, this is a huge story. And I think there's more to come on this. And they want to keep this story in the public eye. And so in that respect, I certainly, understand it. It's you have the opportunity to go on network news to talk about this story. It makes a lot of sense. Tomorrow on the program, we're going to be talking to Mark Mazzetti, who wrote the book Way of the Knife about the CIA. He's been doing some reporting, at least on Snowden, from what I can tell, with Charlie Savage at the New York Times. This was an interview that we had already booked as of last week, but he couldn't make it because of some complications. So we're going to be talking to him tomorrow. in the days and weeks ahead, I imagine we will have access to Glenn and others. But if you have ever written a book on the NSA at this point, you are in high demand. And in the pecking order of these things, television certainly precedes radio. And then within the radio, I imagine there's also a pecking order as well. But, you know, I've been working through this stuff. We don't know nearly as much as we're going to know in the future about Edward Snowden. And there are some issues that I find are more relevant than others. I'm not really terribly interested at this point in saying the man is a hero. I certainly don't think that he is a traitor. And it's quite clear to me that what his actions, at least, were heroic in the sense that he has knowingly opened up a huge can of trouble for himself. And seems to have done so with the best of intentions. And I think that's admirable. I mean, there is a lot about the guy that we don't know. What is, I think, more enlightening at this stage about Snowden is what he has exposed just in terms of how much private industry is part of this national security state. Billions upon billions of dollars and a huge profit motive to increase the size of the national security state. And this is always a problem for those of you who love the free market. You must obviously, in the idea that money incentivizes growth and entrepreneurship and private enterprise, this is a real problem. And it was something that was started under the Clinton administration in attempting to shrink the size of government. Of course, it's not shrinking, and the size of government, at least in this regard, has shrunk relative to the size of the apparatus. Nearly half of this national security apparatus has now been privatized, where there is an ongoing incentive to enlarge this apparatus. An incredibly powerful incentive, where our tax dollars go to increasing this private industry. And they, in turn, lobby and, who knows, kick back in the form of, I mean, look at the current head of Booz Allen was a former chief national security official under the Bush administration. The current head of the National Intelligence was a former Booz Allen employee. And so we have created a monster. And by outsourcing this, we have added a layer of expense, and we have created, again, this self-licking ice cream cone where the supposed need for all this secrecy is created by those who are making a lot of money out of arguing the need for secrecy and building the apparatus. Now, again, I'm not terribly interested in making Snowden the story, and I think that is a secondary story. And as much as he was not interested in making him the story, he certainly became the story in doing this extended interview and exposing himself in the way that he did. And it's relevant because, I mean, one has to keep in mind this, okay? What we know from the timeline at this point, and again, you know, I don't want to get too mired in this, but it's relevant as to the... I'm not convinced that we really have a good sense of what, of why we know what we know at this point, and how we came to know what we know at this point. And this is relevant because whenever you start to see leaks like this, whenever you see this information, and you there's always stories that we may never know about it. Now, this does not in any way implicate the essence of what we know from Snowden at this point. The government has not in any way, as far as I have read, denied any of the validity of the information that has been passed on at this point from Snowden. No one is denying that PRISM exists. No one is denying that Blarney or Boundless Informant exists. No one is denying that the FISA court now, instead of signing off on specific warrants in specific instances, now has assumed the authority to sign off on large programs without scrutinizing what is individually sought in those programs. And that clearly goes beyond what, at the very least, was public knowledge about these programs. And that's what's important here, is that there has been an increase, and we saw it with the signature strikes and the targeted assassination program. I imagine this is indicative of a lot that's going on in this area of our government, which is there are bodies of secret law which are authorizing these programs. In other words, our representatives have voted upon certain laws, and then those laws go into a black box. It's like those math problems when you were a kid, right? The number 5 goes into function and comes out the other end as the number 3. And then you must deduce what's happening in that function, that black box. In this case, it was -3. And if you get another problem that said the number 15 and the number that comes out the other side is 12, now we know it's -3. This is the same dynamic that's going on here, and on an unprecedented level. The law is passed. It goes into this black box. It is interpreted by the DOJ. It is interpreted by the FISA court. And it comes out the other end and authorizes all sorts of things that have not been adjudicated publicly. And this is what the heart of what Wyden and Udall were screaming about for the past couple of years. The American public does not understand how these laws are being interpreted and then how they're being executed. And that has become the biggest revelation, I think, of these that we have seen so far from Snowden, is that we now have a sense of how they're interpreting them and what comes out the other side. And to that end, yesterday, the ACLU and the Yale's Law School of Media Freedom and Information Clinic filed a motion with the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court seeking the release of secret court opinions that permit the government to acquire Americans' phone records en masse. This is dealing with the first disclosure which was a court order. And we don't know for sure, but the suspicion is that it was simply a reauthorization of an ongoing program. In this instance, we saw the court order reauthorizing Verizon to, or ordering Verizon to hand over all of these phone records. The speculation is, and I have not seen much pushing back against this, is that it's not just Verizon, it's all the phone carriers. And it's not just for this three-month period, it's been ongoing. But it needs to be reauthorized every 3 months, which seems rather arbitrary at this point. Would it make a difference if it was 6 months? Would it make a difference if it was 9 months? Whether it was 60 days as opposed to 90 days, it doesn't seem to matter. That centers around, as we talked about with Marcy Wheeler last week, Section 215 of the Patriot Act, which allows the director of the FBI to obtain secret court orders from the FISA court, compelling third parties, that would be phone companies, and perhaps other entities that are involved in telecommunications, any tangible thing which is, quote, relevant to foreign intelligence or terrorism investigation. Now, the problem here is that relevant as a very broad term, tangible thing is a very broad term, and what the ACLU and this clinic from the Yale Law School are seeking is, what is the justification? What is in that black box? What is the function that you take that law, and what is the legal reasoning that comes out the other side? The real danger here, in my estimation, is this secret law, this regime of secret law. Because there is no oversight. When the Supreme Court rules on and interprets a law or interprets the Constitution, there is a very explicit mechanism for all of us to understand how they achieved that end result. We may disagree with it. We may not agree. We may agree with it. But it is part of a broader political process. We can then say, okay, I am going to exercise my agency as a citizen to agitate, to get my political representatives to change that law, or to amend the Constitution, or to elect a president who's going to appoint judges who have a different perspective on the Constitution. Those processes are rather are less than acute insofar as there's a lot of things that muck up that process, even beyond the fact that there may not be a majority of other voters or citizens who agree with that opinion that I may hold. Even once it goes through that process, it is degraded by money and influence, et cetera, et cetera. But at least that process exists. At least we can take measure of where we are as a society. This type of generation of law is incredibly problematic for democracy because there is no part in that process, as insignificant as it may be and feel at times, there is no part for us as citizens. And there is no oversight. There are no checks and balances to this. We don't know at this point exactly what our elected leaders really knew about these. We don't even know what the members of the intelligence committees knew about these. They claim in some instances to have known, and others they claim not to. We just don't know. We do know that when he was brought in front of Congress, to answer certain questions. Senator Ron Wyden questioned the director of National Intelligence, James Clapper, as to whether or not the U.S. government was collecting data on American phone records. Well, I'll just read it. In answer to Wyden's questions in March testimony, this is when Ron Wyden asked specifically, does the NSA collect any type of data at all on millions or hundreds of millions of Americans? Now, Wyden knew the answer to this. The answer was yes. And we know this is true now. We now know what Wyden knew, or at least what partly informed that question. On March 12th, and Clapper answered, no, sir. Does the NSA collect any type of data at all on millions or hundreds of millions of Americans? No, sir. Wyden asked again, it does not? Well, not wittingly, Clapper said. There are cases when they could inadvertently perhaps collect, but not wittingly. Wyden then, following that hearing, gave Clapper a chance to amend his answer. He did not. Wyden sent that question a day before Clapper came to the hearing. Clapper was fully prepared to answer that question. In fact, I would imagine Clapper had a flowchart as to how he was going to answer that question. First response is no. If pressed, not wittingly. Following that, that's it. And when asked about that exchange on NBC yesterday, I guess it was, or the day before, Clapper says, I responded in what I thought was the most truthful or the least most untruthful manner by saying no. He is claiming here that, well, I knew that we had metadata, but he asked if it was data. Now, Wyden said, I will repeat the question, any type of data at all on millions or hundreds of millions of Americans. Clapper claims, well, I was too cute by half in answering that question. He lied. He lied knowing that Wyden knew that he was lying. So, first off, the man should be prosecuted for lying to Congress. Second off, if he is willing to lie to a senator in an open hearing, knowing that the senator knows he's lying, what is he willing not to lie about? If nothing at all, if Snowden's leaking, whistleblowing, however you want to, you know, without getting into a semantic argument about it. And I think, you know, one could easily argue just by virtue of that, exposing that lie and that willingness to lie is probably enough, in my estimation, to qualify him as a whistleblower, because he has, you know, at least exposed that illegal activity. Even if there's ambiguity as to the legality of everything else, that would be enough. That dynamic opens up a whole can of worms that we must continually press and question about. We also now know that This should give standing for any challenges of this program, as there are millions of Americans who have reason to say the U.S. government is violating my Fourth Amendment rights. Of the literally hundreds of cases that emanated out of the warrantless wiretapping and the supposed warranted, although I don't know that you can call that a warrant by really any legitimate definition of the term. The idea that, you know, I don't know that you can actually say it's a warrant if we just can pull everybody's records. It seems that there is an opportunity for this to be questioned. So in a court of law, and this is just the beginning. This ACLU motion, or I guess motion to find out the legal reasoning behind this is enough. All right, so let's dig in a little bit more into what we know at this point, or what has been exposed by Snowden, and then, you know, we can move into that realm of speculation, because there's a lot of speculation about Snowden, and, you know, this notion that there's a lot of talk about, he said he earns $200,000 a year. Booz Allen says they only pay him $122,000. There's a myriad of possibilities of what that is about, and we'll get to that later in the program. And I'm certainly willing to hear your theories on this at 646-257-3920. And you know, what's interesting is so much of the news coverage has been about, what are your thoughts about Snowden? And I will tell you a little trade secret. That is when you do that, when you as a news outlet just don't know what to make of it. So we're going to make part of this story people's reactions to the story, because we just don't have enough information. And I am certainly not above that. But I'm willing to be a little more transparent about it, I guess. We know that James Clapper has lied to Congress. It'll be interesting to see if there's any responsibility for that. We know that this is also indicative of a real problem we have with our national security apparatus, that there are billions of dollars. Well, it's problematic in two ways. One is that we have incentivized an entire industry to increase the national security state. The other thing that we know from talking to Thomas Drake and Tim Shorrock and Jesselyn Raddick is that in the case of Thomas Drake, the reason why he was indicted under the Espionage Act, a prosecution which ultimately failed, the reason why at last report the guy was working in an Apple store when he was, what, like two or three or four in the NSA at one point, was that he blew the whistle on a program called Trailblazer. And Trailblazer was a massive boondoggle, which was to replace a pre-existing program named Thin Thread. This was a more narrowly tailored program that was in place prior to 9/11. It had privacy protection built in. It was much more targeted. His boss at the NSA basically threw that out, brought in Trailblazer, which was an outsourced program was incredibly sloppy, was much more along the lines of a dragnet, was extremely costly and over budget. He attempted to blow the whistle on this. He was pursued for espionage into the Obama administration, despite the fact that the special investigator for the NSA had found that his claims were accurate. Congress later scrapped Trailblazer because it was so obvious that it was a boondoggle. And that is a perfect case of a whistleblower being attacked on national security grounds as a traitor because he was getting in the way of somebody making a buck. That issue is raised by just the existence of a guy who could be working at a Booz Allen, or as what I understand now, he was working for Dell. And I haven't quite confirmed this, but he was working for some other private entity under an NSA contract before he was working at Booz Allen, even while he was contacting Glenn Greenwald in January. And Laura Poitras. But we'll get into that in a bit. So you know about this expanded dragnet under FISA. You know about PRISM, which supposedly we are being told by a couple of members of the intelligence committees in the House and the Senate and by others foiled the New York City subway 2009 bomber plot by an Afghan-American named Najibullah Zazi. That claim seems to be specious. There are British and American documents that have come out of that person's conviction which contradict the claim that PRISM was involved or was the primary source used to locate, apprehend, and investigate this guy. Apparently, it was simply British authorities who had seized the suspects, different suspects' computers, which included email correspondence between Zazi's contacts in Pakistan. None of which points to information that was garnered through PRISM. But even if PRISM has been used in other instances to supposedly foil plots, that is not an argument that it is necessary or that it's a good idea. Certainly, if we had listening devices in every person's home in this country that were surreptitiously put into people's homes, we could also not only cut down greatly the threats from terror, but things like insurance fraud, things like cheating on your taxes, things like maybe stories about how you jump the subway turnstile, any plots that you might have to murder someone, any plots you might have to rob a bank. We would certainly also, undoubtedly, if we had listening devices in every person's home and in perhaps the boardrooms of every corporation in this country, we would stop a tremendous amount of corporate malfeasance. We could go on and on. Where do we draw the line? And if this was all a top secret program by the United States, government, aided and abetted by literally millions of private contractors and billions of dollars of outsourced contracts, national security contracts, and it was all top secret, and there was no one to blow the whistle on it. How could you go in and say that you have evidence that you're being listened to or listened upon? Well, I found a bug. You can't prove whose it is. So who are you suing? This is the problem that we're facing here. And that is the value of this. It doesn't matter at that point who Snowden is or why he was motivated. That's all secondary. Maybe tertiary. The existence of this guy, regardless of who he is or how he came to this information or how he got into the position that he's in or how much he was paid, does not change these basic facts. All right, let's take a phone call. Jay in Connecticut, welcome to the program, Jay.
Hey, Sam, thanks for the broadcast. You know, I just wanted to point out, the man with the most ill-kept secret in Washington got up at a Senate hearing and held up his Verizon phone and said how confident he was that his private data wasn't being collected, and so Lindsey Graham, was protecting the second worst-kept secret in Washington. And, the point of that is, to me, is that, the NSA isn't interested in collecting information on small fry like Sam Cedar or Jay from Connecticut.
Oh, wait, easy, Jay.
They are, the politicians who are, like Feinstein and Lindsey Graham, and I would say probably Harry Reid, are compromised. It seems to me, and they are creatures of the security state that they created. So, and it just seems to indicate itself in so many ways.
Jay, look, you don't even have to speculate about this. We know of reports of politicians of Bill Clinton's emails being read or surveilled, supposedly inadvertently or with a rogue operator or whatever it was. I mean, these stories have come out in the past. And, I don't know if Lindsey Graham had a secret that he didn't want to be revealed to his constituency, just for instance, what you're suggesting is that there is leverage upon him that may be just to, maintain this. I don't know, but the potential for it is obviously problematic. I mean, look, we know Hoover did this, right? We know this has been done. And the further out you get from from government employees doing it, the more problematic it becomes, because the more sort of cross current of interests that are involved here. Now, I appreciate the call.
Who's Alan Hamilton and the Carlyle Group? If there is a certain situation that they want to be voted on in a particular way, you could look back over 30 years of legislation and see that it's come down always on one side. And
Jay, this is a great
point.
It's
always the side of the authoritarians, and it's always on the side of big business. And, no mistake, they have, I am absolutely certain that they've got them by the short and curly.
Well, look, all right, listen, Jay, let me jump off and just keep expanding on this. But your point is well taken. And you don't know, and I don't know the real answer to that. We can speculate. It may seem obvious that this would be done in some fashion, but I can let me make an analogy, and I appreciate the call, Jay. When I know or we all know, frankly, that when GE owned part of MSNBC, we know that at the highest levels of that corporate entity, the decision was made to take Donahue off the air because GE did not want to be on the wrong side of the issue of the Iraq war. And we could speculate as to why. Maybe it was just because of GE's, you know, the CEO's sort of disposition. But it also could have been a function of, like, look, we're in the business of making stuff for war. And so our PR firm, our TV network, is not going to be in the business of arguing against this. Particularly if this is what our government wants to do, we're just not going to be doing that. Booz Allen is owned by Carlyle Group. The Carlyle Group has its financial interests in a myriad of businesses around the world. Real estate, communications, industries, I mean, just all over the place. Maybe even the employees of Booz Allen have divided loyalties. Snowden says he was paid $200,000. Was it all from Booz Allen? We know, at least, well, we don't know any of this. All right, we're going to take a break. We're going to go into the better half of the show. In the better half of the show, I'm going to talk about Bowden's job history. Okay? Snowden's job history. Because there are huge, huge gaps. And there are massive questions as to how this guy went from being a security guard at the NSA facility to a CIA systems and analyst to then, 3 or 4 years later, working for Booz Allen. Huge gaps. And if you don't think that, well, let me put it this way. My understanding is that when they do those lie detector tests, on Homeland, I'm just using that as an example. They brought in their own employees for lie detector tests to see if there was a leak. Apparently, my understanding is that very often, whether you're in the NSA or the CIA or whatever the other myriad of, there's something like 2 million people who have access or 3 million people who have access to the information that Bradley Manning has. Whatever agency you're working in, and they bring you in for one of those lie detector tests that they do periodically on you to make sure that you're not selling secrets. One of the questions they always ask is, are you working for any other government agency? Contemplate that for a moment. We don't know how many employers this guy Snowden had, has, or whatnot. We don't even know who his employers were over the past 5 or 6 years. Glenn Greenwald might. But we don't know yet. It is very difficult to know why we find out the information we find out. And particularly in a situation like this. We're going to talk more about this in the better half of the program. We will take more of your phone calls. I will read your IMs. Tomorrow on the program, Mark Mazzetti, who's written extensively on the CIA, will be joining us. And the number 646-257-3920. We'll also get to what's going on with immigration. Hopefully, this Plan B pill. There are other things in the news at this point. And we'll be right back after this. Oh, you can support this program. I got to say this. The NSA pays me to say this, as does the CIA, as does some private contractors.
They actually are the ones who just reminded us. They sent us a little message.
That's right. I get a little IM.
We aren't funded by the Cubans anymore. We sold out, Sam.
Well,
come on.
Let's not get
The Soros money ran dry.
The Soros money. Soros has been outbid. I'm double dipping here. We actually do have a reminder set up from the cloud, a cloud-based system. Reminds us to the NSA reminds us every day after the show to make an appeal for members. Folks, it is your membership which not only allows us to do this show every day, not only allows us to do the bonus material every day, but also allows us a level of independence that is unparalleled. Well, it's paralleled, but not in every quarter.
And it also puts you on a special list.
It also puts you on a special list. Also coming up in the better half, Michael Isikoff. There was somebody who speculated. I think it was a writer from Wired, and I'm not sure where he speculated this. I can't remember the piece. I think it was on Mediate. He speculated that what Michael Isikoff reported on was that much of what Snowden has released at this point, or we have seen via Glenn Greenwald or the Washington Post, has been declassified the day after it was released. The speculation was that maybe this is a bone being thrown to civil libertarians by the administration. I find that very hard to believe. There may be other reasons why it was declassified. Complete armchair speculation on my part, which I will offer you in the better half of the program. But we're going to take a break. We'll be back in just a moment. Become a member today. You can sign up at majority.fm. Also, if you buy your crap through Amazon, if you buy it through our link, they will track you. They will give us the metadata, and we will get a kickback. JustCoffee.coop will hoover up even less of your metadata, but they will send you a great fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate in response. If you use the coupon code MAJORITY, you get 10% discount. Do so today. It's great coffee.
My metadata for delicious coffee sounds like a fair trade to me.
Guys are feeling their oats after yesterday. Maybe that's what we should do. We should get Just Coffee to do a Majority Report metadata blend. All right, we've got to take a break. We'll be right back. We'll take your phone calls. We'll take your IM, 646-257-3920. Majority FM. See you in a minute.
Say it in a good hand.